Made possible in part by Euromart International Food Store on Springfield and Locust in Champaign, offering 200 kinds of cheeses, 25 kinds of olives, and 100 kinds of olive oil. The Euromart hosts a cheese and olive tasting from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580, WILL Urbana. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. This afternoon, we welcome back to the program dog trainers Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel. The last time we talked with them, it was December. Mm-hmm. How about that? First Friday in December. Carol and Jim are with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. They join us on the first Friday of the month to talk with us about dogs. Dog care, dog behavior, dog training. Listeners, if you've got questions about dogs, join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. And a reminder here that generally what happens is we get kind of backed up with calls at the end of the show. So if you got a question, it's better to join us sooner than later. 333-9455, 800-222-9455. Welcome back. Good to see you.
Good to see you. It'd be nice if someone out there in the audience called and told us how much they missed us. That would make my hurt feelings go away.
I really dug the intro music, didn't you?
Yeah, I like that.
That's our Henry Frayne, Lanterna.
I liked it a lot, actually.
Yeah, it's very nice. You know, we did get a letter for the two of you while you were away, and I shared it with you now. Very nice little snapshot of a dog and its
boots.
Mistress, the dog's wearing boots. And, you know, it's been a while now, so I can't remember what the issue was. Jim, I think that was your advice?
Yeah, sled dogs often wear boots to protect their feet either from what are called snowballs that build up between the toes, uh-huh, or from hazards on the trail. And we were talking about that.
Talking about the snowballs in between their feet.
Yeah.
And she wanted to know, because we were about cutting the hair, and then you start talking about the boots.
These boots are made for walking, or puss in boots?
Actually, could have used those boots in, January and February?
It was so icy out there
every single night. It was terrible.
So, thanks from the listener.
Yeah.
For that tip.
I don't think I can identify the breed.
It looks like a border collie mix. What do you think?
It's like a sweet dog.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. The dog is like, why do I have these boots on? But a cute picture nonetheless.
So this winter, did you go sledding?
The world has turned and turned again since the last time we were here. Yeah, we went sledding up at Eagle River in Wisconsin. And I just heard the weather report in Rhinelander is supposed to get 10 inches of snow. And Eagle River is about 30 miles northeast of Rhinelander. So I could probably go up there tonight and do some more sledding.
Yeah. Last chance. As Carol was pointing out, crocuses are up here.
I was wondering if the plural of that was croci.
No? My crocus are blooming, and this is not an exaggeration, which I said just before we went on the air.
Croca?
I took Robbie for a walk, and I stopped because I love all my plants, and I looked, and there were the little green shoots. We came back, and they were blooms, and I know I didn't miss them in 20 minutes, so it was very exciting. God knows what it'll be like when we get home.
Well, it's 61 degrees.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Big warm up.
60-mile-an-hour winds, too.
So how did Robbie do with the wind?
Oh, he loves the wind.
Yeah.
It doesn't bother him.
Yeah.
Nothing bothers that dog. Nothing. Oh, and I have a problem. Jim knows Robbie. Robbie loves everybody, every dog, and I'm trying to teach him he can't go up to every dog he sees and play because we show, and he can't do that. So when I was out walking, my neighbor was walking her standard poodle, and I once again had to tell her, no, Robbie can't come and play. And that's the reason. He just, it's not being punitive. It's just, you know, he's got to understand that.
It's not just punitive. It's snooty.
It's, just, it's not. It's very difficult to take him to a show and have him try to go up and meet every single dog that crosses his path because you're talking about hundreds.
Thousands.
Thousands, yeah.
Going to Louisville?
No, I'll be on vacation during the Louisville show, so I'm not going. But I was up in Milwaukee last weekend.
Louisville is usually around St. Patrick's Day, one of those weekends. We're not going.
It's a five-day show. It's a huge
And it's usually show. The biggest show in the country.
Yeah. Yep.
How far do dog shows go back in history?
Well, Westminster's.
Ugg and Grog had a dog show in the Neanderthals, Ugg and Grog. So it goes back pretty far.
It goes back a lot.
You know, why did I think he was going to give a real answer? I don't know why I anticipated it.
Well, Westminster's been having a show since, they're about 130.
Churchill Downs is the oldest sporting event, and Westminster's
about
the
1885. They've been
19th century.
That's just one kennel club. So I would imagine about that time.
So who knows? Maybe in France or England. I think Crufts has been going on longer than that. One of the problems with dog shows before Louis Pasteur was that virulent diseases like distemper would be spread if you got too many dogs together. So it really wasn't until they had those antivirals that you could even have a reasonable dog show. Not that dogs weren't being bred and exchanged among people, but I don't think you could have a cattle show, which dog shows are based on. You couldn't have a dog show until you could control the disease.
Well, put on your headphones. Uh-oh. We've got some calls. We're going to go first to a listener on line one in Champaign. Hi. We have a caller there on line one.
I got nothing.
I got nothing, too. Well, we'll give it another try. Jason Croft is feverishly pushing buttons. I think we better mop his brow. Okay. Nope.
Oh, there
okay.
It is again.
Let's try line two, Champaign. Hello?
Hi. Your advice about the booties is great for the winter.
Okay.
And that's in Newfoundland.
Oh.
It's a noof?
She's a girl, so she's a little smaller than the normal Newfoundland. But it was great.
Yeah.
My husband loved them, and that worked really well in the winter.
Yeah, actually, the only hard part is getting the dog not to take them off.
Well, we took them off right away when we got home. Mm-hmm. So we put them on and took her out immediately. So thanks a lot for your advice.
Oh, sure.
They worked good.
Okay. We'll send you a bill.
We've already got the bill from the people that provided
the booties. Yeah.
Yeah.
The other problem with booties is they can get hot. It's one of the few places where...
Well, we haven't worn them since the freezing weather.
Yeah.
So
you take them off. Yeah. But that's one of the only places a dog sweats is from its feet. So it really has to be fairly cold before you put on booties. So don't be putting booties on in the summer.
No, we won't.
Okay.
It's so hard to put them on and take them off that we won't do it unless it's really cold.
Right.
Yeah. Did you miss Jim and Carol?
Yes.
Oh,
there you go.
Okay.
Goodness.
That's right.
We had so many responses to our question last time about the booties that everybody's like, oh, booties. They were talking about it. So a lot of people are listening.
We got a lot of mail about booties, and it was just something I didn't think was that extraordinary, but because mushers use them all the time.
Well, I've seen another pair in our neighborhood, so they're catching on.
It's a fashion trend,
right?
Sure.
Yeah. Well, thanks a lot.
Okay,
start to get
for
Western booties
this
and
afternoon.
High heel booties.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, it's a very bad idea.
Ballet slippers.
Ballet booties.
Hello Kitty slippers. Booties, rather.
Yeah. I think
hey Sailor, new in town booties.
This is the Afternoon Magazine, and Jim Keel and Carol Lindholm are back with us this afternoon after a two-month hiatus.
Three.
Three? Has it been three?
Well,
no.
We were off for two, but we've been gone for three.
Okay. I'm not going to argue.
Oh, that's splitting hairs.
Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel are here on the program. They're with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. They join us on the first Friday of the month here on the Afternoon Magazine. We're happy to take your telephone calls this afternoon about dogs. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. And I think we're going to have another listener join us here momentarily.
So you have ESP. She has a premonition.
Oh, it's a trick, but I'll tell you how it works later.
Put your headphones on.
You have to put your headphones on, Jim.
Thank you. I already have a mother.
They're a little rusty, I think, after their time off. Let's go and talk with another listener. Caller in Danville, line one. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. Your talk about the booties for dogs has prompted a question I've wondered for quite some time. Every time on the news when rescue dogs are seen pouring over, you know, earthquake debris and so on, I never see them wear booties. Why don't they, for protection?
Well, the booties are really mostly for...
pads then.
Yeah, I think it would be a good idea, especially... in some of those places where you have metal,
I think they do if there's been
or glass.
World Trade Center because of the fire. The fires, I think that some of them did, but I would think too, walking over the uneven, treacherous terrain, they'd have to be able to feel what they're stepping on.
Dogs' pads, as you may know, the bottom of the dog's feet is made up of kind of modified but dead hair. The pad is actually, that material isn't alive.
But I've seen hunting dogs get their pads cut.
You have to go fairly deep into it before you actually cut flesh. There's a lot of cushioning.
Well, I didn't know how familiar you were with rescue dogs or what they did or didn't do.
Not that much. I think it would be a good idea in a lot of places. But also remember, as we were talking to the previous caller, especially in hot areas, those booties prevent the dog from sweating through its feet, which is about the only place on their body that they sweat. So if you have the booties on, it's a trade-off. You're protecting the feet, but the dog might overheat. And so it depends on what the temperature is and things like that. I think it's a good idea for the dog's protection, you know.
Well, thanks for the call. Thanks for the interest. Next, we're going to talk with caller on line three, a listener on a cell phone. Good afternoon. Hi.
I'm calling to ask about what do I do with a dog with submission peeing?
It's not funny.
I really need to laugh. There was a judge, a local judge years ago that had a dog with the same problem, and there's not much you can do. Usually, though, the dog will do submissive pee when you greet it, you know, when you first get home or come in and you say hello. What you can try to do in those greeting situations where the dog hasn't seen you for a while is just totally ignore the dog. When you come home, don't go up to the dog and say, oh, it's so good to see you, and anything like that, because that's a fairly dominant thing to do, and you're going to get some submissive peeing. How old is your dog?
About 9 months.
Most, but not all, dogs that do submissive peeing grow out of it. 9 months, you're getting kind of at the frontier of when they should have grown out of it, though. I'd give it a little while, but in the meantime, notice those times when the dog is submissive peeing, and I would guess it's usually when you're greeting it or calling it over to you or something like that. And just ignore the dog so that the dog doesn't have to act submissive toward you. Don't do anything to make the dog greet you, because submissive peeing is generally a greeting. What subordinate animals do as a greeting to the dominant animal. So if you can avoid greeting the dog, that would help.
Or getting down on the dog's level. That helps instead of bending over. Mm-hmm.
What kind of dog is it?
Collie.
Oh, yeah, just get down on get at eye level with the dog. Now, Tracy had submissive urination specific.
She just squats. I mean...
She's just what?
She squats.
Yeah.
Well, that's how she can go. as long as she can go.
Another thing you can do, these are just various things you can try. It's a very difficult problem that you have. You know, there's. I wish you could wave your hands three times and pat your head and it would go away. What have a cookie or a liver that the dog really likes, something, and when the dog goes to squat, throw the liver a few feet away from the dog so that her whole attention is off of you and off of peeing and onto the treat. You want to do that fairly quickly so you don't reward her for peeing, though.
Okay.
You know, but as soon as you know she's going to do it, toss the thing, and that'll get her mind off it, if only for a second. And at that time, you can go about your business and you can end the greeting. Those are just things we can think of. But our friend the judge, who used to live near Carroll and who came to our training club,
he still does live there.
But that poor dog had submissive urination all of its life. It got better, but it never went away.
I'm gonna hang up. I can't hear you.
Okay.
He sounds like he's in a plane, not a car, on the wing.
Yeah. So since he couldn't hear us there at the end, you want to just go over that last little bit about the treat?
I thought that was a pretty ingenious
idea. That's a pretty good idea.
Yeah. Well, most submissive urination is a greeting, and so if when you first see the animal and it comes up and says hello, and that's how it says hello. So if you know, you should have at the ready a treat. If you know the dog is about to do it, or even if you think they're about to pee, throw the treat nearby. Don't hide it. Throw it where the dog can get up and easily get it, and maybe have another one ready. And do that a few times just so the dog, one, doesn't pee, and two, gets used to you greeting with treats so that it doesn't think about squatting.
I've got a dog in class right now that is so happy, so excited, so thrilled to be there. And he wiggles all over, and urine just comes flying out. It's involuntary. But he's a puppy, so that will all get better.
Yeah. They'll get more control.
There's another thing I should mention. The caller should, or anybody with a problem, take the dog to the vet and make sure there's not a upper urinary tract infection or UTI infection, because that can also lead to this kind of behavior.
Okay, let's talk with another listener. Caller on line 2 in Urbana. Hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Fine, go ahead.
Okay, I love your show. And
did you miss us?
My question has to do with getting a dog. I have a daughter who is 8 years old who's been wanting to get a dog for several years, and I would love to do that for her. But my concerns are twofold, and they have to do with my wife, who recently had some surgery done, and she's afraid that, you know, a dog might trip her up or something. And secondly, that, you know, she's concerned about the mess the dog will make in the house and everything, just having a dog around in general. You have any suggestions?
Well, I'll speak to it from a gender perspective.
Okay.
First of all, I could almost guarantee you your wife will be the one that will end up caring for the dog more than your daughter.
Well, actually, I already made the deal that it would be me.
Okay. Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, that will help.
Yeah.
I made the same deal, too.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Her concerns, I don't know what kind of surgery she had or what kind of dog you're considering, but
right.
That's a current concern of hers, is falling, which may subside as time passes.
Yeah.
Mess, you got a dog, you're going to have a mess. I mean, there's just no way around that.
Right.
You're going to have dog hair. Right now we're battling bringing in mud from the yard.
Right.
Depending on what breed you get, it increases the amount of time that's spent cleaning.
Yeah.
If that's a concern.
Uh-huh.
So her fears are legitimate, and
right.
Your daughter's desires are also legitimate, but it sounds like, you know, I think you need a mediator.
Yeah.
For what that's worth.
Well, that said, based on the scenario of an 8-year-old daughter, though, are there certain dogs that are good for that age group that are lower maintenance, I guess you could say, or...
Well,
or how does one go about choosing a dog for a family? I guess that would be another way to look at that question.
That's a real good question.
Yeah, when you have young kids, it's not the kind of dog. Like, there are some Malamutes that probably would be ideal.
Yeah.
Most aren't.
Right.
And what I'm thinking, you have to understand, one, there are very few dogs, even submissive dogs, that will give an 8-year-old kid any respect.
Mm-hmm.
They're just not going to listen to the kid. And that's because the dogs are very keen observers of our behavior, and they see the kid as submissive to you and to your wife, and the dog says, well, if you know she's submissive to them, she must be submissive to me too. And that's hard to get around unless you have a really submissive dog. If you're getting a dog for an 8-year-old, and you're getting it for the 8-year-old,
uh-huh.
You'd want a companionable dog, but I would say not too big.
Uh-huh.
The size of the dog really, it's not the size of the dog of the fight. It's the size of the fight. No. But you want a nice, friendly dog that's not going to knock her over. So a nice, smaller dog. Enter the wife. I was thinking, well, a Sheltie would be good, but Shelties have a lot of hair.
Uh-huh.
You might want to get, I would say, some sort of terrier. Like a Karen Terrier, like Toto,
uh-huh.
Or a West Highland White. I would not get no offense to my friends with JRTs, but I would not get a Jack Russell. They're way too smart.
Too active. You know, I'm sitting here thinking it might be.
You were very pensive there.
In your best interests, to make certain that your wife really, she needs to want the dog too. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll be real frank with you. You all three of you want to have a dog, but you might consider going out to the shelter,
uh-huh.
and seeing what, because you'll see just everything under the sun there. Seeing what type of dog attracts you and your daughter and your wife. I would guess your wife would want something with short hair as opposed to a lot of coat.
Right.
And don't go out there, like if you go tomorrow, don't go out there with the intention of adopting a dog tomorrow.
Right.
Just make repeated trips and see what type of dog that you're attracted to, what seems to respond best to your family unit.
Right.
And, you know, take your time because we've got, you know, you've got months of good weather ahead of you.
Yeah.
And just take your time and see. Does your daughter have any friends with dogs?
Yeah. And
okay.
She just loves animals. She's wonderful with pets. And I, you know, she's even volunteered to take dog scoop training. Poop training.
That, now, there you go.
Yeah, with one of the neighbors to prove that she's really serious about it. So.
Yeah. And we just had we have a class that we, Canines and Kids, that's for children 8 to 11.
Is that right?
Yeah, and I've got two young girls in my home companion class. I think they're 11 years old.
Yeah.
And girls seem to really relate to dogs on a level that would exceed a boy at that age.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't have concerns about the age of your dog. I'd have more concerns about your wife.
Yeah.
Because you don't want her
that
unhappy.
Is my concern, actually. Otherwise, we'd probably just have some dog by now and be dealing with it.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Thanks for the call. Next, we're going to talk with a listener in Champaign, line one. Hi.
Can hardly hear you.
Okay, go ahead. We can hear you.
Okay. Back to the dog rescue work and dogs. They don't have a chance to get good footing if you put booties on them for some of that work.
Yeah, I wouldn't think that would help them at all.
What you were talking about with the pads and everything is keratosis. And there are several variations on that. That's the dog's pads are rather like people's feet. And they get corns if you aren't careful with your breeding. But I was glad to hear you say that you would suggest to this gentleman to come out and see your classes, because I think that is really a better place to find out what type of dog you want is the kids and dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Julie, shut up.
Did you say shut up to me?
my dog just wanted to kill the door for... Oh.
How about Irish Terriers? Do you think an Irish Terrier would be good for those folks?
Well, yes. I would think a Schnauzer, Minn Schnauzer, an Irish Terrier.
Border Terrier? Not a Border Collie. a border terrier.
No, I don't. You know, I got the impression that this woman would dislike barking
too. The small, short-legged terriers are sometimes not such a good bet.
They're kind of yappy.
They're also kind of snappy.
Yappy and snappy. Not Karen so much.
I've known a lot of them that are just fine and wonderful, and then every so often you get one. And back to the piddling, I had one dog that I trained. She worked so well, so beautifully. Joyous piddler every day of her life. She'd do something right. She knew it was right. She'd leave you a little puddle. So it's just a puppy thing, or some of them just do it forever. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a tough problem if you have it.
My Tracy was situation specific when it came to submissive urination.
Thanks for the call. Next, we talk with a listener on line 3 in Danville. Hi.
Yes. I have a 7-year-old black lab. How do you keep them from putting a black cast on all your rugs? He seems to be shedding all the time.
Oh. the quickest thing to do would be, do you bathe them yourself?
Yeah. No, I take him into the kennel to have him bathed.
Yeah, this time of the year is... Get him and make sure that kennel uses a forest air dryer to blow all that hair out of his coat.
Well, I brush him every day.
Yeah, that's not going to work as good, though.
You can brush him all day, every day. And dogs have a lot of hair. I think it was 100,000 hairs per square inch.
It's such a short-haired dog leaves a black cast.
That's what because people gravitate towards short-haired dogs because they think, and I just gave that advice to that gentleman, but they think the shedding's not as bad. It's just not as obvious as if you have a long...
Short-haired dogs have as many hairs as
they have just
as
many.
Dogs.
And they're actually more difficult to remove from carpeting and upholstered fabrics than a long-haired dog, because you got a long-haired dog, you just get big piles of dog hair that
floats. The Malamute hair floats on the rug. Right. Yeah,
you can actually walk through and pick it up, but a short-haired dog kind of...
Sticks
hairs
right in there, yeah.
Wind their way into the threads.
Not being able to get it all up. Now, I've read in this pet catalog, they have some different lotions that they suggest you give to a dog to keep them from shedding. Do you ever recommend anything like that?
I've read about them. I've never tried them, and I don't know if they would work at all.
I doubt it. You can give them there are supplements you can give them to get them to shed quickly.
Well, he don't need that.
What you want is because people think a dog sheds all the time. Dogs shed seasonally. And when they shed, they're just blowing their coat out. When they're done, of course, they're always losing some hair, but it's nothing like the shedding season. Jogs or dogs will generally shed once a year. Females often shed with their cycles. But it's a definite period of time.
Well, this guy seems to be shedding all year round.
Jim, I know what you're talking about, but I think your average house pet is going to shed all year round. And they'll have one big, huge shed either in the fall or in the spring. But seriously, to alleviate the problem now, the most immediate problem is getting that hair out and have your groomer blow him out with a forced air dryer. And it's forced air, and there's no heat necessarily involved, but it just blows. Well, I do it in the garage, and cars are covered with air, but blows that coat.
They're actually cattle dryers. People use for cows at cow shows. We use those on the dogs. You can't turn them on full blast because you'll knock the dog off the table.
they're powerful. They're pretty strong.
And they blow the hair off. That's how we do it. We put the dogs in the backyard, turn the dryer on them. They're not even wet, and just... It's like it's snowing.
Yep.
Hey, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, good luck. Let's talk with another listener. Caller on a cell phone, line 1. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment in terms of your suggestion to the caller who was thinking of getting the dog for his child. We had a Cairn Terrier for 15 years, and first, it never shed. We did brush it, but we had no shedding problem at all. Secondly, in terms of dominance, you can expect a full lifetime of struggle in terms of who's in control, whether it's you or the dog. And our dog would always end every barking. They like to walk around and just bark. And every time we would finally get him to shut up, he would stop for about a minute and then just let out one last yelp just to let us know that he was the boss. Also, I think this is something you have to really think about in terms of terriers, because they do want to dominate. And one other thing in terms of, I know you mentioned piddling, our dog actually did submissive urination for about a year and a half, and then one day it stopped, and it had also been neutered when it was relatively young, and it took about a year before it learned to raise its leg. And I just remember all kinds of strange things that, you know, we would have with him, where every time he urinated, he turned around and smelt his urine, and our doctors were sure that there was something wrong. It turned out our dog just liked to smell its urine. And before that, we had an Irish wolfhound, so that's sort of the tall and the short of it. And my suggestion is that someone interested in a dog go and look at the books, and just remember the books are all written by people who like these dogs. So they're incredibly biased. And to try to go to a place and play with the dog, we also had a Japanese chin, which was supposed to be the runt of the litter, and grew up to weigh about 10 pounds. So that was certainly not in the books. And so I think the best guidance is to, as you said, make sure you get a dog that isn't going to be so big that it's going to knock the child over, particularly one that's so big that a puppy or a dog can just go and want to give its paw to the kid and knock the kid over or scratch his face. You have to be careful about size. Yet you don't want one that's so small that the kid's going to throw it down the laundry chute. And then after you get the dog, use as much positive training. In fact, hardly use any negative training. And then pray a lot, because that seems to be the final measure on what your dog is going to be. And if you're a nice person, the likelihood is your dog will turn out to be pretty nice, too.
That's good advice. I like that last part. Thanks.
It's not true with Robbie, though.
Robbie's a nice dog.
That's what I mean.
Oh, he caught me, didn't he?
Yes.
I walked right into it.
Shut that trap.
333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else in the U.S., call toll-free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL, 333-WILL.
Hawaii? Can they call from Hawaii?
I don't think Hawaii, but
Alaska?
In the continental U.S. Oh, okay. How about that?
How about Alaska?
Continental U.S.
It's on the North American continent.
It's contiguous.
Ah, contiguous.
There we go. Thanks, Carol.
You're welcome. I wanted to use that word all day. I didn't think I'd have the opportunity.
I'm happy to have supplied you
with
the chance.
Here comes the duck. Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel are our guests this afternoon. They're with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. They join us following the 1 o'clock news on the first Friday of the month. Although they've been away for a couple of months, we're happy to have them back. 333-9455, 800-222-9455. Caller on line one in Bloomington. Good afternoon.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
I have a question about my Pomeranian who has transitional cell carcinoma in his bladder. And he has had one surgery since the carcinoma is at the back end of his bladder and was operable. And the veterinarian is suggesting that he go back in because they didn't get it all. And my Pomeranian is 12, and I'm just struggling with my options.
You know, it's funny. I had lunch with friends yesterday, and I had been to the university yesterday. And one of the friends that we were having lunch, well, all of us have experienced cancer in our dogs that were lunching. And while at the university yesterday, I watched some of the dogs going down to the cancer. Were you at the U of I, or where'd you go?
No, just a local veterinarian in Bloomington was able to do it.
And at any rate, we were discussing, you know, some of them had done quite a bit of extensive life-saving treatments for their dog, and others had opted not to. And, you know, and Jim can address this issue, too. It's such a personal decision that I would feel uncomfortable giving you any advice. It's something only you can decide what you're going to do.
Right. Yeah, I understand that. I guess with the first surgery, I guess I felt I understood that I was buying more time than I actually did.
Mm-hmm.
After the surgery, the doctor said that, you know, you can expect, treat him as though he has 6 months to live. And I thought, well, you know, I just spent $700 and I'm getting 6 months. I guess I expected more life from him than that. And I really don't think I would go and have another surgery simply because I just don't believe it's going to get him much more.
No, and you know, it causes him, the dog, surgeries hard on him at that age.
Right.
Going under anesthetic is hard on him at this age. And whether you have surgery or not, there's no given that he could live another year, he could live another 6 months with or without the surgery. It's just a difficult thing.
I'm trying to sit here and think, but over the years, probably we've had about 10 dogs with cancer. 9 of them were not improved by treatment. 1 was. And the way I look at it is a dog going to be better off after the surgery than they were before? And as I said, 9 out of 10 times, I have to say they're not. If they have a disease like this, the operation, they don't have a lot of resources to fall back on. They have these operations, and they're considerably weakened. The healing, they can't heal as fast because of the disease process. They're older to begin with. It's just very hard on them.
Right.
We have friends, if you think $700 is a lot, we had friends that put between $7,000 and
$8,000
into cancer treatment. And I felt sorry for the dog. Every time I saw the poor animal, he was on chemo. And he lived a couple years.
Well, that's pretty good, though.
Yeah, and but once they were shooting him up with the chemo, which they did in the back leg because the big veins are back there, and they missed. And these are fairly profound drugs, and it kind of ate away at his muscle, so he's limping around for the rest of his life.
I would never go through those treatments, and I do not want him to be in any pain. And my doctor has assured me that, you know, he's on the acetaminophen drug. Maybe I'm mistaken.
It's not so much pain. You know what the dog was like before, and you know what he's like now. Does he seem?
He seems the same.
Happy.
He does.
And,
is that good
yeah.
or bad that he seems yeah. the same?
No, very good.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
No, he's very, very alert and always.
Well, 12 years old for
playful.
A Pomeranian isn't very old. You know, they can be quite long lived, so that's just kind of middle age for that.
We've had more success in cancer treatment with bone cancer, where it's called palliative radiation, where they zap the nerves around the tumor, and so it doesn't hurt. It doesn't add a minute to their life, but it makes the end of their life more comfortable. If your dog, if he had one operation and he seems to be fine after it, then the operation isn't tearing him down.
I guess I'd like to know how they know they didn't get it all, though, without going in and doing surgery again. How did he discover that they hadn't?
They do an X-ray or?
Yeah.
He sent the tissue off to the university.
Oh, okay.
And they confirmed that they didn't get all of it. And he does want to go in and do another X-ray and possibly a scope and find out. But I just...
Well, the dog that it was successful with that we had liver cancer, and they chopped off where the tumor was, and he lived another year. And he was very happy. I mean, he wasn't in pain. And
it was just surgery. He didn't have any other
It was just, yeah, treatment. We didn't chemo him. We didn't do anything. And when he died, one night he didn't eat his food, and the next day he was dead.
Oh.
So it was fairly quick when it came. And that was fairly successful. And I would be happy if every time we had cancer that we got that result. The problem is it's more typical that you do an operation or a treatment and the dog is just miserable for the few remaining months that it has. So I generally recommend against it.
Yeah. Okay. Do you think that it's the Proxicam is what I was trying to think of that he is on? do you think that that is probably keeping him from being in pain at this point from the...
I don't know anything about the pharmacological aspects of it.
Okay.
But if, you know, give him the, you're there, you can see. If he doesn't seem to be in pain, that's great.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Okay. We're going to go and talk with another listener. Caller on line 2 in Champaign. Hi.
Hi. I have Yorkies and a Pomeranian, and I was under the impression that they both breed would live to about 12. But one of your guests mentioned that that was about midlife.
Oh, I was a little exaggerating, but they can be very long-lived.
Yeah. Life is merrier with a Yorkshire Terrier. Yeah.
Well, Yorkshire Terrier is a lifespan is about 12, is that right?
Oh, no.
No.
Much longer.
They're longer.
Yeah.
Really?
Smaller breeds live longer than the larger breeds.
Can you tell me how long the Pomeranians and Yorkies might...
Well, in good health, I'd say easily 15 to 18 years.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Well, I wouldn't say 18, but more like 15, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, I'll say 17.
Well, it's very individual, but the smaller breeds live longer. And, more than 12 years.
My neighbors have a Bichon. I think he's 18 or 19 years old.
Wow.
He's still out there walking every day. I mean, he's slowed down, but you'd never know from a distance that dog is that age. And apparently, she's told me it's not uncommon to have them to live to be 20. So,
wow.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Well, that's one aspect of having a small dog that's in your favor.
Yeah. We've got just a couple of minutes left here in this portion of the program, and we've taken care of the callers. I would hate to invite more people to join us at this point because we've only got
late.
A couple of minutes.
Tell them to leave us alone.
They missed us.
Boy.
They've had these burning questions for 2 months.
I thought we were here to answer the public's questions. Why are we saying we don't want to take them?
Oh, can I talk about something exciting?
I was going to ask you, is there anything exciting?
There is. For all those animal planet aficionados out there in the crowd who are familiar with Dr. Kevin Fitzgerald, that hunk from Colorado that has his own clinic on there and everything, he's going to be here April 17th. The University of Illinois Wildlife Rehab Unit is going to have their annual doodle auction and fundraising event, and he is a celebrity MC. And he is a draw. I watch it just for him.
Really?
So that's April 17th.
Where is he from?
Colorado.
Not a small state.
Does the audience care?
I know a couple vets in Colorado.
His name is Kevin Fitzgerald.
Well,
do you know
him? I don't know him. No. But is he from Denver or from?
I don't want to talk about him.
He appears frequently in living
Durango?
Rooms around the country, right?
That's correct.
That's right.
So anyway, that's April 17th.
Fort Collins?
Maybe. I'm sure we'll have folks.
And I use that wildlife unit.
Boulder?
Remember my little squirrel that was dying?
Yeah.
And I took it over there. They were so good to me, those people. I mean, I had this squirrel in this Rubbermaid container, which, you know, got in there by a great deal of difficulty. But they were great. They sent me a postcard and told me that he, you know, unfortunately didn't make it. So
I'm
we
sure
need to
that
support
we'll talk
that
with,
group of people.
And
with
what
those
did he
folks
have?
In April.
The West Nile virus.
And what did I say he had?
What did you say?
Said he had West Nile virus.
Well,
how
and
about
you
any,
went, oh, no, no, it's not West Nile.
How about any upcoming events at the dog training club? You got classes coming up?
Oh, we have so
up?
Many.
Oh, it's hard to keep track.
It's true. There's so much going on. We have our first Rally Obedience trial in April. And Rally Obedience is just a new form of a new event, which is so great fun, but I don't even dare try to go into it this late point in the day. But that's, what day is that, Jim? Is that the...
I'm looking it up here.
Oh, I know.
But I can't.
See, I'm such a nerd, I don't have one of those things to whip out.
Yeah.
I have to rely
Palm
on my
pilot?
Memory. We that's have a, an agility
you,
trial in April.
You may be a nerd, but you have eyes. I can't read. It's too small to read. That's the...
Oh, look at this.
See at the ring.
Oh, you've got all this in here. You're so weird.
Yeah.
Okay,
myself,
the agility so. Seminar is April... Oh, that's a seminar.
Yeah.
Agility trial is the 24th and 20th. That's not right. How do you scroll this thing down with my finger?
You can.
Does that delete it?
Yeah, you're going to erase everything. Yeah.
Okay, maybe they should...
That's a disaster.
Okay. Maybe they should check the website. How about that?
Thanks, Celeste.
And that website would be...
I don't know.
I always...
Put in your browser, Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana.
That's what I do.
There.
Okay. I Google it every time. Isn't that pathetic?
You know,
are we ready to get off the air? I'm starting to get warm.
Those things have bookmarks on them. You know, when you go there, you can.
It's just I just like to Google. I can't help myself.
Well, happy Googling, and we'll see you next month.
Thanks.
Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel of the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. It's 9 minutes before 2 o'clock Central Time. Settlement prices are in from the Chicago Board of Trade. Here's Todd Gleason.
Thanks very much. I appreciate it. And let's take a look at the numbers from the Chicago Board of Trade, Celeste. Finished the day like this. So actually, it was a pretty quiet day at the Board of Trade, at least on the finish. The March futures had a high in the wheat pit at 370, a low at 366. A settlement price there, they finished at 366.5, and they were down 4.25 on the day. May futures for the wheat pit, 378.5, the high, the low at 372.25. Settlement price at 373.75, down 4.75. July futures 381.5, the high, the low at 375.5, a settlement price at 377.5, down 4 cents. September contract 385.25, the high, the low at 381.5, a settlement price at 382.5, down 2.5, and December wheat finished the day with a high of 393, a low at 389.5, a settlement price there at 391.75. And they were down 2.25 on the day. Kind of funny if you take a look at what came across the wire services today from the Chicago Board of Trade. Traders are simply worn out after this week and were pretty appreciative of a light trading day. In the corn pit, I read one comment that said all they wanted to do was to go home with the wheels not falling off the cart today. So here we go. March contract finished just a quarter of a cent lower, 292 for the day. On the high, the low at 288, a settlement price 290.5. Once again, that March corn contract down a quarter of a cent. May futures a 299 high, low at 295. A settlement price there 297.25, up a quarter. July 302.25 high, low at 298.75. A settlement price at 301, up a quarter of a cent. And September futures 296.5, the high, the low at 292.75. A settlement price at 294.75. They were down a quarter of a cent on the day. December contract the 294 on the high, the low at 289. A settlement price at 291.5, down a half, and the March corn 294.75, the high, the low at 290.25, a settlement price at 292.5, down a half. July corn futures 297, the high, the low at 293, a settlement price at 295, down a quarter, and December contract, this is for 05, 2 years out, 266, the high, the low at 264, and a settlement price there, 265, they finished a penny and a half lower. The March oats 152.75, the high, the low at 151, a settlement at 152.25, down a quarter, and the May oat contract down 2 cents for the day, 157.25 on the high, the low at 153.5, a settlement price there, 155.25, once again, that May oats settling down 2 cents for the day. From the soy complex, the nearby March contract, 937, the high, the low at 922, a settlement today, the last day of the week, 933.75, a settlement price, a penny and a quarter higher on the March beans. May futures, 941.5, the high, a low there at 925.5, and a settlement price 937.75, up a penny and a quarter. July futures 929, the high, the low at 915.25, a settlement at 926, they were up one, and the September beans 814.5 on the high side, the low at 803.5, a settlement price at 811.5. They finished up a half cent. Now the November crop, November contract, this year new crop, 743, the high, the low at 732, settlement price 739.25, down a quarter. January beans 740, the high, the low at 732, settled 737.25, down a penny and a quarter. March contract 736, the high, the low at 727, settlement price there 733.5, and they finished a half lower on the day. The March bean meal, 283.90 on the high side, the low at 279.60. A settlement price at 283.80. They were up one even for the day. The May bean meal, 285.70. The high, the low at 281 even, settled 285.60, and they were up 140. March bean oil, 33.10 for the high, the low at 32.56. A settlement price at 32.74. They were down 21. And the May contract, 33.03. The high, the low at 32.30. And a settlement price at 32.67. They finished the day 12 lower. Now here's Celeste with the numbers from the Chicago Mercantile Exchange.
Thanks, Todd. A mostly lower day today for cattle, but lean hogs and bellies finished higher. March feeder cattle, 87.45 the high, 86.90 the low, 87.30 the settlement, that up 12.5. April, 85.30 the high, 84.45 the low, 85.25 the settlement, that unchanged. May, 86.25 the high, 85.20 the low, 85.82.5 the settlement, that down 35. August, 87.95 the high, 87.37.5 the low, the settlement 87.92.5, that down 45. March live cattle, 81.95 the high, 81.30 the low, 81.45 the settlement, that down 45. April, 79.90 the high, 78.65 the low, 79.22.5 the settlement, that down 20. June live cattle, 74.40 the high, 73.10 the low, 74.32.5 the settlement, that up 47.5. August, 73.30 the high, 72.75 the low, 73.15 the settlement, that down 50. April lean hog, 62.10 the high, 60.60 the low, 61.92.5 the settlement, that up 145. May, 62.20 the high, 61 even the low, 62.10 the settlement, that up 80. June, 67.50 the high, 66 even the low. The settlement price today, 67.40, up 115. July lean hog, 63.60 the high, 62.10 the low. The settlement, 63.57.5, that up 130. March bellies, 95.90 the high, 94.80 the low, 95.62.5 the settlement, that up 37.5. And May bellies, 96.85 the high, 95.70 the low, 96.55 the settlement, that up 47.5. The Dow up 16 points at 10,604. The NASDAQ is off 2 at 2053. The S&P 500, 3 higher at 1158.
Today's programming is made possible in part by a grant from Birkenstock Concepts by Heel to Toe in downtown Urbana. For over 25 years, offering all sizes and widths of Birkenstocks, from clogs and sandals to work, dress, and sport shoes. Birkenstock Concepts offers repair and modification services and a certified podorthist and orthotist on staff.
It's time once again to Ask Dr. Science. So let's ask Dr. Science.
That's me.
Remember, he knows more than you do.
That's right.
Ray Wong from Hong Kong writes, "Dear Dr. Science, what is the relationship between turgidity of potato cells and the molar concentration of the surrounding medium?"
I'm pleased to say there's no relationship between them at all. There is, however, a distinct linear, though often exponential, relationship between the price of potatoes and their taste. A double-blind, deep-fat fried study of potato cells and their relationship to licensed mediums was performed by the highly respected Psychics Network. Those TV visionaries found no correlation between any of the variables, but they did manage to eat any potato product that was put in front of them, and then they billed the researchers $400 an hour for their time. Clever, those psychics.
Thank you, Dr. Science. Send your science questions to Ask Dr. Science. Remember, he's not a real doctor.
I have a master's degree
in science.
Produced by Duck's Breath and distributed by PRI, Public Radio International. To order a Dr. Science I Know More Than You Do coffee smug mug, call 800-989-DUCK or go online at drscience.com.
Today's broadcast is made possible in part by 10,000 Villages. 10,000 Villages' 12th Annual Showcase of Fair Trade Oriental Rugs will be held March 5th through 13th at their store, 105 North Walnut in downtown.